Okay, so you know, maybe before I continue, one word about TUF. So maybe I will not even write it. So framed tangles or framed objects in general. I should have perhaps said it earlier. But framed objects are a Z extension of unframed objects. So they're just an extension by one Z for each component. And so the distinction is not terribly interesting. You only lose or gain one Z. And we saw it because, like, I could tell you, the only issue was with what happens on the diagonal. And the framed objects are often better behaved. Rittmeister 1 is often an annoying thing. Like, we already saw it for the Jones polynomial. So actually, much of knot theory is about framed objects instead of unframed objects. Anyway, why is it just a Z extension? So here is a piece of a framed tangle. You can see that it's a ribbon rather than a strand. Okay, this I took a piece of string that was not like the ones on my shoes, but it's sort of flattened. So that's a ribbon. Now, if the ribbon turns around itself a number of times, and it could still be knotted with other stuff, that's irrelevant. Well, I will not show it, but it could still be knotted with other stuff. Well, can you hold it? So I could still, basically, I could hold my fingers here, push them like that, and then bring all the curling to the end. And that's independent of what crosses above or below. Okay? So basically, I could just turn this self, the framing, into a single integer that I write at the beginning of the strand or the end of the strand, and it's basically just an integer. Okay. Right. So I want to tell you about pi s, and I'm going to tell you about pi s by telling you about a metamonoid morphism between framed tangles, so usual framed, and pi. So I'm going to define a meta. The structure of pi will be whatever makes the morphism I'm about to construct a homomorphism. Well, not quite, but you'll see. So let me give a name for this morphism. This morphism is called pi 1. Pi 1 stands for the fundamental group of a knot. And we're hereby learning about the fundamental group of a knot, which is in itself a useful thing to know. Okay? So basically, if you have a tangle, or you know what, let's start with a knot. So if you have a knot, K, then you can always associate a group to it. And the group is so-called pi 1 of K. But this is, people write pi 1 of K, but it's really pi 1 of the complement of the knot. Pi 1 of the knot itself is a circle. Pi 1 of the knot is Z, it doesn't tell us anything. But when people write pi 1 of K, but they really mean pi 1 of the complement of the knot. The complement of the knot is a subset of R3, and as such it has a fundamental group, and this fundamental group could be complicated. Okay? Okay, for tangles, I can do a little more. So, what will be pi 1 of a tangle? So, again, let me draw the only tangle that I can consistently draw, this one. So, pi 1 of this will be a triple. So, the triple is, first of all, okay, so let's call it T. So first of all, it will be pi 1, the group will be pi 1 of the complement of T. Okay? But I actually have a little bit of additional information. Namely, my convention will be to pick the base point to be my nose. Okay, so I look at the tangle and the base point is my nose. So there are canonical elements inside the fundamental group. And they are, basically, you can go to the tail of one of the strands from your nose. You can go to the tail of one of the strands, hit it just to the right, hit it just to the right, and then go below the tail and out, and then back to your nose. So it's basically a path that goes around that strand and comes back. And this I can do for each of the strands. Okay? Now this path is called, so if this strand is strand number one, this path is called the meridian of one. And the meridians is really a function from the set of paths to the set of to the fundamental group. So in other words, I get the meridians, and they are some function m going from S to G, or alternatively, it's an element m of G to the S. Okay? And then there is another thing that you can do. Namely, you can go from your nose to a point to the head of the framing, so to here, then trace along the framing, I'm talking about frame knots, go all the way to the head of the knot, of the strand, and then come back to your nose. So such a path is called a longitude of a component, so in this case of one, right? And again, I have one longitude per component, so the collection of longitudes, L, is a member of G to the S. So that's pi 1. Maybe example. Well, so basically everything will be generated by a single crossing, so maybe I should compute pi 1 of a single crossing. So what's pi 1 of a single crossing positively labeled with x and y? So, what's the fundamental group of the complement? Oh, I should have said of the complement in a disk. If you just look at the complement of the tangle and you allow yourself to pull stuff out of this disk, then clearly it's trivial, right? So really, what I meant is the tangle is drawn on a disk, but really you should be thinking of it as embedded in a cylinder, and then it's the complement in that cylinder. So this TC is in the cylinder, naturally containing T. Okay? So now, suppose I have two strands, and they're inside the cylinder. I guess I could draw it, but could I draw it? Let's draw a cylinder. Here is a cylinder, and I have one strand going this way, and another strand above it going that way. What's the complement? What's the fundamental group of the complement of that? So basically you can think of a small loop going around one strand, a small loop going around the other strand, and these are the two generators and they're independent. So it's the free group on it's the free group on two symbols, X and Y. And in fact, the best way to view these two symbols is as the meridians of the two components. So basically, X is this. So X as an element of the group is this blue meridian, and Y as an element of the group is this blue meridian. Okay? And so the function M, so the function M is the function which maps the component X to the element X and the component Y to the element Y. Right? And the function L is the function that, okay, so L should be the longitude. The longitude of L is to go along the X component, but starting from my nose, I wish it was here, but I mean starting from Travis's nose, so basically you go to here, along, and back. That's a trivial loop. So X goes to 1, and Y goes to, so Y would be, again, start here, go towards component Y, along it, and back. But that's exactly what X does. So Y goes to X. Okay? And had it been an undercrossing instead of an overcrossing, I think the only thing that would change is that Y would go to X inverse or something like that. Okay? But that's the that's pi one of the generators. Now I need to tell you what is the union of G1, M1, L1 with G2, M2, L2. So I'm doing it within abstract group theory, but it should be the solution to the question. Suppose the fundamental group of one tangle is G1 and the other one is G2, with meridians and longitudes given here, what would be the fundamental group of the union? Well, the fundamental group of a union of two spaces that are connected along a contractible set, right? If I'm putting them side by side, I'm really connecting them along a contractible set. So that's the free product of the two groups. So this will be G1 free product G2. And now, M1 was a function into G1, it automatically becomes a function into the free product, likewise M2. So basically, it will be M1 union M2, like the union of two functions, which is defined on the union of the domains. It's not really because, again, because you have to, it's really M1 composed with the inclusion of G1 into G1 free product G2. But you understand what I mean. And likewise for L1, same thing. L1 union L2. The operation, you know what, let's start with something easy. So the renaming operations I'll skip. You just rename. The operation, actually, no, even renaming is non-trivial. So, but let me start with deletion. So what's deletion? So deletion will map, so okay. So, okay, so I have G, M, L, and I want to know what deleting strand X would do to it. So the obvious thing is that it will map M to M minus X. And when I remove an element from a function, what I mean is remove it from the domain of the function, keep the rest unchanged. Likewise, L, you just remove X from L. So basically, from the list of meridians and the list of longitudes, you remove the component X. But there is something bigger that happens, another thing that happens. Namely, one meridian, so if I remove, suppose I remove this component, then a loop around it becomes trivial. So I also take my original group and I mod it out by the relation that the meridian corresponding to the component X, so M of X, is becoming 1. So the group also changes. Okay? So, something similar happens when you rename. So when you rename, you just do renaming here, but you also need to... I will not go through it. It's not interesting. Let me do the stitching. So what's M, X, Y, Z? Okay? So M, X, Y, Z will map a collection G, M, L to... Okay. Again, let's leave the group to be last. Okay, so just let's leave space for it. What will happen to the meridians? So, maybe I'll draw it. So, so here is my tangle, and here is component X, here is component Y. What happens to the, and I'm stitching them like that. Like this. So what happens to the meridians? So I have a meridian and a meridian for Y. The meridian for Y simply gets forgotten. Right? I keep my meridians at the tail. Okay? So the meridian for the combined thing becomes the meridian of X. So basically I'll get the function M from which you drop the elements X and Y, and instead you add a new value, and this is the value that Z goes to the old value of X. So Z goes to MX. Okay? Now what happens to L? L is more interesting. Okay, first of all, X and Y disappear, so I have to remove them. But now I have to see where Z will go. Okay? So where will Z go? So what's the new meridian? Sorry, the new longitude. Sorry. So the new longitude is the longitude of X. Oh yeah, it's just times the longitude of Y. That's all. So it's becoming the old longitude of X times the old longitude of Y. Sorry, it wasn't so interesting. The interesting thing is what happened to the fundamental group. So the fundamental group becomes the same fundamental group, except the head meridian of X, so the meridian near the head of X, should become... is made equal to the tail meridian of Y. But the head meridian of X, well, there is no such thing. We need to write it in terms of things we know. But basically it's the, so what's the head meridian? It's this thing. But a different way to write this is to go all the way down, and then along the tail meridian, and then along, and then up. So it's basically the tail meridian conjugated by the longitude. So you mod out by the relations that the meridian of Y is equal to the meridian of X conjugated by the longitude of X. Okay?
Shouldn't it be reverse the orientation of the... Shouldn't it be the tail meridian of X... inverse? I mean, the opposite or direction?
No, I think this is it. I think that's what it comes to.
Okay.
Ah, the reason is because I wrote this arrow the wrong way. My meridians were supposed to go from... No, I wrote this arrow... Sorry. I wrote this arrow the wrong way. Sorry.
Okay.
My meridians were supposed to go from right to left, and... Okay. I think this is the correct formula, but I notated things incorrectly. That's kind of lovely, isn't it? It's a metamonoid that actually acts on groups as well. Now, I should say that in principle, since tangles are generated by individual crossings, and since I told you what the image of the generator is, and I told you what the operations are, this allows you to compute the fundamental group of an arbitrary tangle by a sequence of these operations. Okay? Okay. I should also say that, you know, there are various operations that take groups to Lie algebras. So free groups go to free Lie algebras, and there are lots certain things that you can do, and these become also metamonoid morphisms. So you can also get invariants of knots with values in various free Lie algebras, and the difference is that this is in fact not computable, not really computable, because the word problem, because you get general groups, you get groups that are hard to understand this way. But once you push it further to Lie algebras, everything becomes computable. But that's just an aside. Okay, let me take a picture, and then, or two pictures, and then okay. So, okay, actually, to be even more useful to knot theory, I should talk about two further operations. So, I had operations 1 through 4 when I was defining metamonoids. But now I want to tell you about two further operations on frame tangles, and later also on all the other things, or many of the other things that we'll be talking about. So, further ops on T. UF, framed tangles. So operation 5 actually makes sense also on unframed tangles, and it's kind of silly, but I haven't used it yet. Okay? And it's an operation SX going from tangles that have a component called X back again to tangles that have a component called X. So really I should have called it SXX, because my convention is that the upper things get removed and the lower things get created. So right when I did renaming, so an X got removed and a Y got created. So I should have called it SXX, but I'll be lazy and just call it SX. Okay? And what it is it's just a strand reversal. Okay? So I think for all of our examples, strand reversal makes sense. But it's not always obvious. So for example, for the fundamental group of the complement, strand reversal, so what would reversing a strand do? So it will. So basically, since I'm computing my meridians at the tail of the strand, the meridian at the tail becomes the meridian at the head. The meridian at the head is just x. Well, is we've already figured it out. It's x conjugated by l. So the operation will replace one meridian by its conjugate by the corresponding longitude. But even the longitude, so the longitude goes along the knot, and now it should goes along. It should go along the knot backwards. So it should go to L inverse. But in fact, does it matter? No, I think that's fine. It just so L goes to L inverse, and that's it. Okay, and then there is one last operation. So operation number six. Delta x, sorry, x, y, z, and it goes from tangles from S union x into tangles of S union y and z. So strand x gets removed, and strands y and z get created. And the operation is, so basically, strand X, whatever it was, gets replaced by two parallel copies that do exactly the same thing. Or, you know, maybe I'll draw it within a tangle. So basically, if this is your tangle, so and this is strand X, then it will go to... strand X gets replaced by two parallel copies, and there is some convention, and it should be Y is to the right and Z is to the left. Yes. Okay. Now, it makes sense for most of the things that I mentioned. But you know, maybe I will tell you what axioms it needs to satisfy. So, or properties, and these properties will become axioms. So properties, so there are boring properties, but then there are three interesting properties. So boring properties are how does this interact with renaming and things like that. Also with deletion. So if you double and then delete Z, you've just renamed X to Y. So there are boring properties, but then there are interesting properties, and they are meta co-associativity. So basically, if you double X and then double Z, you've tripled X. But you could have tripled X by doubling X and then doubling Y. So more precisely, it's, so if you start from U and double it to X and V, and then take the V and double it to Y and Z, then that's the same as starting from U and doubling it to, sorry, I want to get Y and Z, so to V and Z, and then doubling V into X and Y. Okay? And there is an axiom about the antipode, or about reversal. So basically, or several axioms, I should have said. So reversal and then doubling is like doubling and then reversal. Multiplying two things and then reversing is the same as reversing and then reversing each one and then multiplying in the opposite order. So instead of mxy, you will be using myx. Okay? Let me state an interesting axiom, which I actually, there's also one. Further, I'm using axiom, and it's so basically, if you have a strand, you can double it, reverse the orientation of one component, stitch the two components, and now you have like a finger which possibly goes above or below other things, but you can still pull it back. So this is really equal to that. And what is that? So that is just the original thing with the original strand deleted and replaced by a trivial strand. I could write it, so let's write it. So applying the coproduct x into yz, then reversing the way I wrote it the wrong way. I should have done it this way. So not that it matters. I should have reversed z, and then stitching y and z, calling the result back again x, is equal to, first of all, deleting x, and then inserting a trivial x. So I failed to mention this one. So this is insert a trivial copy of a strand, or insert an identity. I guess, strictly speaking, this is just the disjoint union with a trivial tangle of one component. But it's not within my structure yet. So I should have put it in my structure. Okay? So I apologize. Then I forgot about it when I was preparing my class. Okay. Anyway, and then there is a last property, and it's the compatibility of the product and the coproduct. So basically, if you have a pair of strands, x and y, you can stitch them. This is not a finger like here. I mean they could be knotted. You can stitch them and then double the result, so you'll get a thing like this. Or alternatively, you could double each one and then stitch the copies, and you'll get that again. Okay? So I think it becomes something like, so multiplying x and y, so if this is x and this is y, then multiplying x and y, calling the result z, and then doubling z, so taking this z and doubling it and calling the result z1 and z2, so calling the result z1 and z2, is the same as doubling x, calling the results x1 and x2, followed by doubling y, calling the results y1 and y2. This to commute by axioms that I never specified, basically by the things that are far away don't matter. Multiplying x1 with x2, calling the result z1, and then multiplying y1, sorry, multiplying y1 and y2, calling the result multiplying x1 with y1, calling the result z1, and multiplying x2 and y2, calling the result z2. Sorry. Okay. So now, anything satisfying these properties, so anything satisfying, I'm running out of chalk. Here's another one. Anything satisfying these is a meta, well, Hopf algebra. Okay? So, examples. So, not all of our previous examples are examples. So, g to the s works, because the doubling operation will be, you just make two copies of a group element. So basically, if you have x goes to some group element g, then you'll convert it into x and y, both group go into that group element. Okay? M to the s doesn't work, because there is no s operation, no sx. Sx here, I didn't tell you what it is, it's invert a group element. And there is no inversion in a general monoid. That's kind of silly. 3, a tensor to the s works if a has a coproduct, is a Hopf algebra. So I hope I'm not above the background level. Is this okay? Is it?
I could vaguely know what a Hopf algebra is.
Oh.
There's like a co-algebra structure, and then there's some fancy map that like says they sort of behave well nicely.
So in fact, if you want, a Hopf algebra is that A for which A tensor to the S will be a meta-Hopf algebra. Okay? I hope I'm not lying to you. I mean, I think this is right. So basically, what's a Hopf algebra? It has a, well, it should have an MXY into MXYZ. So A tensor to the S should have MXYZ. So in other words, from A tensor A, you should have a map to A. That's a product. And then you should have a map from M from, well, and then the thing that corresponds to delta should be a map from A to A tensor A.
Yeah.
That's the coproduct, and it should satisfy precisely the axioms written here. So it should be co-associative, and it should be compatible with the product, and the compatibility with the product is exactly that. Okay. I forgot what other examples did I have. M, S cross S, so S by S matrices work by, you negate a row and a column for the S, and you double a row and a column for the delta, okay? And finally, pi. So pi of s works, and why is this? So, I mean, I could write explicitly what to do. But abstractly, you know what? you can just think about it explicitly. What? No, no, I still want to do it abstractly. So I have a tango, and I have to replace one strand by a pair of strands. One way to view it is to think of a model situation. So I have a pair of strands inside the cylinder, and what I do is I cut out a line from my space and insert a cylinder with two lines in it. Now, the fundamental group of a cylinder with two lines in it, I can compute. It's actually essentially the same. It's just the free group on two generators. Okay? But now I need to use Van Kampen. Right? I'm really attaching the original complement to this new cylinder with two lines removed. And I'm attaching it along an annulus. So the boundary of the cylinder is just a S1 cross interval. So it's an annulus. So I'm attaching it along an annulus, so I need to take the free group and mod out by the fundamental group of the annulus. But the fundamental group of the annulus is I know everything I need to know about it. Namely, I know that the generator that goes this way and when the generator that goes that way is actually trivial, so it doesn't matter. But so I guess what I'm saying is that I have all of what I need in order to apply Van Kampen. I didn't write the answer, but I have the tools to write the answer. Okay, one more picture, and then, or two more pictures. Okay, so since everything now was about meta, so let me tell you about a meta claim, which is, okay, so one reason why all of this is interesting is because it means that if you know the values of some invariant on the generators and you know how all of these operations act, then you can compute it on anything. But the other reason is the following meta claim. So meta claim means it's not really a claim, but then it becomes lots of independent claims. So the claim is that the meta claim is that a lot of knot theory is expressible using this language, or in terms of this language, in terms of tangles or frame tangles and the operations that I mentioned, and hence can benefit from invariants that respect, so morphisms of these these structures, okay, and hence can benefit from. But you see, I will call such invariants, or maybe the principle that these invariants are useful, I will call algebraic knot theory. And it will become clearer later why. Okay? But loosely, so if you've seen algebraic topology, homology, and stuff like that, so, you know, homology is an invariant of spaces. Therefore, if you can compute the homology of a space of surfaces, you can tell that a surface from genus 2 is different from a surface of genus 3 because their homologies are different. But that's actually not the main strength of homology. The main strength of homology is that it behaves well relative to operations between spaces. In particular, if you have a map between two spaces, you have a map between the corresponding homologies, and that's somehow the key that becomes later the proof of the Brouwer fixed point theorem or whatever it is that you do with homology theory. So similarly, if you have an invariant, it's good. You can tell apart the trefoil from its mirror image. But if you have an invariant that's well behaved under operations, you will be able to tell that you might be able to prove theorems about properties of knots. And that's the meta claim. The meta claim is that sort of invariants that behave well under these operations are to knot theory like homology theory is to algebraic topology. Okay? And let me give examples. I will list the examples, and then I'll have to so that's a meta claim, and then I will have to explain each example in detail. Okay? So the examples are, so first of all, so far I haven't spoken about links. So links are tangles. Well, links links are knots with several components. So basically they have, instead of having just one component, they may have two components. And in fact, I explicitly excluded links. I only talked about things with components that look like intervals, not like circles. But I claim that if I have this language, I can talk about links as well. Okay? In fact, even better, if I have this language, I can talk about three manifolds. So I can express three manifolds in this language. And therefore, whenever I have a well-behaved invariant of things which have all these properties, it is automatically an invariant of three manifolds as well, or creates an invariant of three manifolds. Unfortunately, sometimes the trivial invariant of three manifolds. It's not guaranteed that you'll get something interesting, but at least you get something. By the way, if you do it for pi 1, you'll get the pi 1 of the three manifold. There is stuff to say about knot genus. I started saying it last time, and I thought I would continue this time, but it seems like I will not have time. Then there is stuff to say about ribbon knots. So ribbon knots is yet another class of knots that have some extra property, and I can say something about them in this language. And therefore, invariants that have these properties might say something about ribbon knots. Sometimes they say the trivial thing, but in principle they could say something. And finally, there is something about unknotting numbers. Unknotting numbers. So the unknotting number of a knot is the number of crossings you need to switch in order to get the unknot. And it turns out that, again, this language can express unknotting numbers and therefore potentially can say something about it. And in fact, there are several other examples, but these are the most interesting. Okay? So, but I'm out of time, so I will have to justify this meta claim next time. Okay? But it is the reason the whole reason for this hour of stuff is so that 2 hours of stuff is so that I can state this meta claim. Okay. So Travis, you can turn it off.